Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Welcome to the program, Daniel.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and we have a magic wand here.
Yes.
And we're going to sort out all the information we were given yesterday and why the world's coming apart, but it was all explained to us because, and it can all be settled if they could just impeach Trump before he gets out of office. You know, there's a race to destroy this man completely. Of course, you know, he wasn't our first or second choice because for president. But, you know, over the years, I think I grew a little bit sympathetic, mainly because of his enemies. You know, there were so many. And what has been going on, you know, since 2016? It was even in the campaign, but immediately afterwards on and down. And he thought, well, then they started waking up and they say, boy, this guy might be for real. There might be somebody out there that likes him. That's what really terrified him. So the people started piling on and then they had Russiagate. One thing I noticed about this Russiagate business, if another party is doing a lot of bad things, like I think Hillary might have been involved with a Russian, they turn it around and blame it on their enemies. And it worked to the degree that Trump had to fight that for 4 years. And he finally won that fight. So this is the whole problem that we have, is that this contest going on up and down. So it's a real mess. But it has continued, and they say that we will soon come to an end. And here it is. He's almost ready to leave, and they're pretending, well, let's see, we can impeach him, we can invoke the 25th Amendment, we can do this and that. So the motivations, it has to be very, very weird. You know, if he's as inept as they say, well, just forget about him. Why do they give him so much attention? And he'd have to walk out and take the power from it, and that would be it. But it seems like you know, he stirs a lot of animosity, and it's not that if he's that bad, he has no power. He has no political power. Now, and he has no financial power or anything, and yet they're hysterical with him to try to make sure he is totally destroyed. And I keep thinking, Daniel, about this whole situation that's been going on for years. And I thought, well, you know, I really expected him to win the election. I thought to myself, he probably has talked to more people in 4 years as president than all the rest put together. Millions of people. And the one thing that I noticed, because, you know, if these people are so bad and ornery, there must have been a lot of violence in doing that. So go back and look. I don't know, were there 10 rallies or 50 rallies, 100 rallies? There were a lot. But I don't think, and you can imagine, if there had been any violence whatsoever, I think it would have made the headlines. But you can't even find it. So what's going on now is really a bit strange, and figuring out how it came about. And we do know that Trump he's a bit esoteric, and we know all those things, but what really is true? So my question to you, Daniel, and to everybody else and to myself is, who's behind all this? Is this just the natural consequence of what happens to a country? Of course, in the big picture, I've written about that, in the big picture, what's happening to this country, I call it a financial and moral bankruptcy. But this is a specific event, and I'm sure the moral and financial bankruptcy is in an atmosphere of that. But there's something more going on now, and it's very specific. It's your gang against our gang, and we're going to do away with him. We're going to destroy him. This looks like the last punch, the final destruction of this man, and they will never see or hear from him again.
That seems to be the idea. And I'll preface my opening comments, Dr. Paul, with a message to our friendly YouTube censors, which is, we are not going to pass on misinformation or disinformation because we don't have information. All we have is speculation, and that's our job here. So go eat. But what we want to look at are some anomalies, some of the things that were weird that happened. And like you pointed out, there have been hundreds of Trump rallies, and there really hasn't been any violence. If there was, the mainstream media would have loved to highlight it. So what did happen today? Well, I mean, I've seen some weird video. I saw the Capitol Hill cops open up a barrier and beckon for people to come toward the Capitol building. What does that mean? I don't know. We don't know the context. I saw video of Capitol Hill police officer leading a group of people who so-called breached the ramparts up into the Senate, toward the Senate chamber, saying, come this way, come this way. Was that a part of crowd control? We don't know. We don't have the whole picture, but it certainly is an anomaly. Unlike a lot of people who are talking about this, I've actually been in several Capitol Hill lockdowns, Dr. Paul. When I worked for you in the Cannon House office building, we had a some Halloween staffers went through the metal detector with a funny costume on that they found later, and they locked us down. And apparently once there was supposedly a shooter, they locked us down. They locked us down several times, and they kept claiming that airplanes were about to fly into our building. And I do have to say that the there was a mythology about the Capitol Hill police officers. They're not omniscient, I can tell you for a fact, for the way that they've handled previous lockdowns. They were, if anything, very inconsistent in how they did things. But it still was strange because they knew days in advance that this big rally was coming. Yet it didn't seem like they had made any adjustments to how they handle Capitol Hill in advance of an expected million people. And of course, there's this, apparently a million, million and a half people there. So there are a lot of anomalies that I think need to be discussed, and hopefully in a sober way. But really scratching our heads and asking the question, cui bono, who benefits from all this?
Well, you know, I do pay a lot of attention and accept a lot of the suspicions about cultural Marxism, because it is said that their goal is to cause social disruption, make it bad, and make it obscene, where there's so much chaos. Then they move in, and that's been traditional how Marxism works and communism. They march into the chaos and they take over. And so we've had a lot of this extremism in the local area, especially. And in this last year, especially with the lockdown, which was a big cause of a lot of our problems. Of course, that was government inspired, and there's no proof that the lockdown was a good medical maneuver, you know, for helping people. So, but there was a lot of violence going on. Then, on top of the lockdown, then we had the demonstrations by Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and they go out there, and all of a sudden you see some real violence coming in, and they're tearing down buildings and burning down cities, and people were getting killed. A lot of deaths occurred. And then the outstanding feature of this is people would say, where are the police? Where are the police? Oh, yeah, well, they're there. Their cars are burning up, and they're not doing a darn thing. So that was a big thing. And it finally dawned on me, I guess the cultural Marxist movement is a lot stronger than I ever dreamed, because these sentiments, which are passed out through the universities, were accepted by, you know, city folks, their mayors, the county commissioners, the governors. They participated in that. So when there was violence and all, they would go and say, where are the police? Where are the police? They would actually literally become the allies of these hoodlums on the street. So I sort of came around to accepting that was happened, that the movement toward Marxism is very, very powerful. But what shocks me a bit, if we can still be shocked, is, and Daniel, you just more or less described this, on why the police, Capitol Hill police, haven't done more. How did they get in here? And there's pictures now appearing. And I get to thinking, well, you know, I can understand how a mayor could be influenced and bribed and got to do things in his distorted mind politically. But for that power and influence can infiltrate into the Capitol Hill police, where, you know, they were actually, what is suggested on some of these reports and the ineptness, why are they so inept? And that, of course, is what they're figuring out, you know, becomes sort of part of it, either, bad policing activity or a participant in it and allowing this to get to a certain point. Now, that is what turns out to be the truth. Believe me, that is a big step. That's a lot different than, getting one bad mayor in New York City and one bad governor in New York and one state going to the dogs. That's one thing. But if they can do this and participate in an event like yesterday, I think that's scary.
It is scary. There are some strange scenes, too, because you think of a mob, you think of destruction. We saw what happened in the summer with the Black Lives Matter and the Antifa, where they burned things up. And it doesn't even seem like anyone lit a cigarette inside there even. In fact, there's a funny scene where they're walking through the statue gallery, these so-called mobs that broke through and are taking over the Capitol. They stayed very neatly within those velvet lines, those velvet ropes. They didn't step outside the line. So it's funny. But you did have some provocateurs. And some people speculate, hey, maybe these are Antifa. Of course, Reuters did a fact check after all, so we can rest assured that that's totally false. These were not infiltrated. They're all pure 100% Trump people. At least that's what the mainstream media tells us. We don't know that. The weirdest guy was a guy with a buffalo hat on his head. We had buffalo horns. Some people have looked at his past and they found him at different Black Lives Matter rallies. They found him at a climate change rally. It looks like the same guy to me, but what do I know? Other people really did not look like Trump supporters for what it's worth. They had some unusual, they had a guy with a hammer and sickle tattooed on his hand. That was at least on one tweet. So it is strange, but Dr. Paul, there's a huge danger of the mob. The mob is a dangerous thing because if you get a bunch of people together for a peaceful rally, it only takes a few provocateurs to completely detract attention away from that. And we've seen it overseas, and now it's coming to our shores. We saw it in Ukraine where they got people out to peacefully protest in the street, and then you had a few snipers that came and blew the whole thing up. We saw that in Syria as well, where you had provocateurs infiltrate crowds. So there's always this possibility of extreme violence when you have a rally. And when you look at the motivation for people who wanted to see violence, it doesn't take a genius to understand there's a huge incentive to have this happen. One final thing on this segment, Dr. Paul, is what's weird is I was watching the BLM and Antifa people beating the snot out of the police back in the summer. And I looked over quite a few video. I didn't look at all the video from yesterday. I didn't see anyone really that violently beating up on police officers. So it's just odd, of course, there you go. The mainstream media is not going to comment on what happened over the summer, but didn't see that level of violence yesterday.
If there was some planning for this and they needed some symbolism, they got a lot. There was a lot of pushing and shoving and violence and this type of thing going on. Somebody even got killed over this, which is very, very bad. But the one picture that was up, and I think a lot of people saw, was so symbolic of, a violent communist revolution coming in, was scaling the walls. I mean, I just can't picture the people that I've seen over the years and the people I've seen on TV, the average Trump supporter, all of a sudden being able to scale these walls. That looked like a bit of a challenge. And besides, we've been told that the doors were open for them. And they were able to walk in and actually guide it in there. So scaling those walls, I don't know what you thought about that, Daniel, but that to me just seemed like there was a bit of planning in those pictures.
Yeah, it did seem framed. But, Dr. Paul, stepping back from the emotional response that we're all supposed to be having, we're supposed to be furious, we're supposed to be what have you, look at the effect of what happened yesterday. This violence, this whatever you want to call it, this disruption happened just as the Senate was about to sit down and have a debate on the anomalies of the voting. There were a group of members of the House and the Senate who objected to the certification, and that triggered a two-hour debate on whether or not there were problems. We knew that the vote would never go the way Trump would want it to go. But the idea of having an open debate for 2 hours over the anomalies is probably pretty important should be for both sides. Immediately after this violence happened, what did they do? They sequestered away the members of the House and Senate. They put them in hiding. They put them in secret locations. And then late that night, when they reconvened, of course, nobody had any mood to talk about it. In fact, they quoted, I think, one senator from Georgia who said, you know, I was going to be one of the lead people objecting to what happened in the election. But after the violence that I've seen, I've changed my mind. I don't have any interest at all bringing up voting anomalies. Let's just certify this thing and get it over. So that's interesting. We didn't even have a single debate, even a symbolic debate, on what might have happened, what kinds of anomalies there might have been. That, I think, is the net effect of whatever it was that happened yesterday.
You know, and I think that is very important, because this could have been, you know, an honest expression of people's desire to prevent this from happening, and offering other alternatives. One being, you know, being very, very careful not to have the federal courts or even the federal government solving all this, but point out that it was the laws, state laws, that were abused, and encouraging people to look at the source, and that is the legislative bodies, and people use, you know, the constitutions to support that position, but that debate didn't really come up, because you know, I think there was like going to be theoretically 12 hours of debate, 2 hours per item, and most of the time they go a lot longer than that because of just the process. You know, the clock doesn't run when they're changing speakers, so that could have been, you know, a total of maybe 15 hours or so. So they had, I guess, two items they went over, but you described it very well. By that time, everybody is exhausted and painted as being very evil. If you didn't go along with this, you were supporting some monster who was going to take over the world. And we first have to get him out of here, and we have to make sure he never gets on Twitter again. They're just terrified that he still might have a podium. And of course, we over the years have, you know, tried to be as objective as we possibly could be, because we had agreements and disagreements on the foreign policy, you know, bringing troops home and different things, and some of the civil liberties. He would come up with things that he did that we didn't like, and we'd mention, and vice versa, and some of his economic things. I was, you know, critical of a lot of that, just printing money. It wasn't my idea, but that was going on. But now the people have rejected the notion that he should ever be listened to. The idea that there's 2 weeks ago and they're wondering if they can impeach him. I mean, that's over the top, and especially they've been trying to impeach him for the 4 years, and they have egg on their face, and they still won't admit it.
Well, this is the purge mentality, Dr. Paul, and you know, we've had problems with Trump's policies over the 4 years. We try to keep it to policies, but of course, the people who viciously hate him on both sides of the aisle go more into personality. But this is the purge mentality. They want to erase Trump from public life. Even as you say, he's about to lose all of his power. They're still terrified of him. And I think it's because they're terrified of Americans. They're terrified of the people. They want to stay in their elite cocoon. But they're doing everything they can. Everything is Trump's fault. I was just looking at, before we started the show, Dr. Paul, and Shopify, which had handled Trump's e-commerce, they've terminated their relationship with the Trump campaign. He can't sell his MAGA hats or whatever he is. He's selling on Shopify. They're above it all now. Zuckerberg had said Trump is blocked indefinitely from Facebook and Instagram. He can never come back. The mainstream media is demanding more censorship of social media. They want to blame everything that happened yesterday on social media and on people being allowed to dissent. People allowed to question the results of the elections, and they're blaming it all on that. But, you know, our old friend Peter Van Buren did a Facebook post earlier, and he made some good points. He talked about really the coup that was it, and how disappointed the media must be to not wake up in the morning with tanks on the White House lawn and a colonel standing up to announcing an interim government. This is what they really wanted. and they didn't get it. And here's a quote from Peter. It's worth reading. He said, "The hyperbolic media, yes. The event was goonish and embarrassing, but in the end, about as historical as a floor battle on the Taiwan on the Taiwanese legislature." You know, they always have those battles on the floor of their parliament. He's saying basically it doesn't amount to much more than that, no matter how the mainstream media is trying to blow it up into the greatest coup in history.
Yeah. You know, in the summertime, it was much was said about, you know, the police. The police seem to be participating. They're not stopping anything. They're standing around there, and the cities are burning down. And on this go-around, though, there was the violence coming. There was the potential, but before it hardly got going, you know, it was a whole... Now, this is really bad stuff. We have to punish people for all this. And before, how many people were really arrested? There must have been somebody arrested with the burning down of these cities and billions of dollars of property damage. But they handled this crisis a lot different in the public because, of course, the players were a little bit different.
Yeah, I was just noticing on the NBC News website had a thing up, federal prosecutors pledge accountability for Trump rioters, you know, and the FBI is asking the public to submit tips and photos to help them identify the people instigating this violence. And as you point out, back in June, when they were actually beating people up and burning up buildings, the FBI was slumbering. They were looking at some, I guess, some race car driver claimed there was a racist symbol on his on his car, and they all ran for that. So they were uninterested back then. And even Biden, of course, is jumping on the bandwagon. He is urging the mob to pull back and allow the work of democracy to go forward. So, yeah. You know, this is really a tempest in a teapot, I think, but they're making the best of it.
Yes, and I think the point you made is very important. They talk in flowering terms about protecting a democracy, and that's their job, and they have to do. We have to get rid of this guy because we want democracy. So they have 100 and some people who want to vote no, but they wanted a discussion because, yes, there's been stories and there's been hints of, you know, corruption and fraudulent votes. And this was one opportunity that was less, you know, a little bit less than demagoguery. It was constitutionally prescribed. That's what their job is. There are a lot of asked questions. And then you point out, you know, that all of a sudden that discussion was just totally demolished, and it never occurred. And I don't know, it's going to be real hard to get people talking about it. I don't wonder what the question now is, what will the history book say? Because I'm sort of curious about, you know, some of those statistics were outlandish on how many people that, you know, were in the grave and they're voting. And you know, why I have an open mind to that is because I remember it very well in my first election that we found a lot of dead people and empty houses and people that had moved. And we won a lot of court cases until it was thrown out with shenanigans in the court system. That was in 1976. So it happens. And I imagine, it has happened. This is a shortcomings on the way this system actually works. But just think of LBJ on how he became a senator. Everybody knows about all that. And then we know about the shenanigans of 1960. So it's around all the time. But eventually, you know, at least history records this. But I don't know how history is going to record this episode of a lot of questions raised with this election.
I would just have one little short closing statement, Dr. Paul, and that is to remind our viewers, to thank our viewers, of course, but to remind them that, yes, we are under scrutiny here on our YouTube broadcast. We have been looked at closely. And, you know, YouTube channels just disappear. We've worked very hard for 5 years to build up our audience to try to do our best for you. We would like to be able to continue to be in touch with you. If we're thrown off of a platform like this, we will go somewhere else. We will discover, we'll do whatever it takes to continue broadcasting the truth. But if we can't reach you and talk to you, we can't let you know what we're doing next. So I will put a link in the description to sign up for Ron Paul Institute updates. Again, as I've said many times, we will never sell, rent, give away your names to anyone. This is just between us and you, a way of keeping you in touch. We don't send things out every day and bother you and make you go crazy. We put something out when there's something important to say, at most once a week. So please, I will put a link into the description. Just sign up. I know everyone feels reluctant to give out their addresses, but we need to keep in touch with you, and we want to keep you informed, and we want to thank you again for watching what we do.
Very, very good, Daniel.
Dr. Paul?
And I want to just close with a mention about you know, the importance of the First Amendment. It is important. And a lot of people have asked over the years, when you talk to conservative and libertarian, they'll name their favorite amendment to the Constitution. And frequently it's the Second Amendment, which is pretty darn important. When push comes to shove, that's a pretty important thing. And we look at all the dictatorships that have taken over. First, they take away the guns, and we're moving in that direction. But when I did my farewell speech, I concluded it by talking about some of these most serious problems, and one was the First Amendment. And I thought that was the most important thing, that we maintain the First Amendment. And it's not that I don't think a lot of the Second Amendment and property rights and all these things. But the reason, and I mentioned this in the farewell speech, is the First Amendment has to be protected, because no matter how bad things get, if they take away our chance to explain ourselves, that just adds fuel to the fire. In a way, that's what's happening with social media, because social media is just not, a private company serving our interests. The First Amendment really protects us in expressing ourselves, and I think the founders understood that. So if we can do that, we need more good journalists. What we need, more Glenn Greenwald. People who will dig in a nonpartisan way, and they're out there, and they've been there in the past, and they've been our friends. But we need more good journalists, and that's why if people get interested in this subject. I assume everybody, I make the assumption, everybody, if you understand it, you have an obligation and a responsibility, and besides, you'll be doing a great service. And I think people who are inclined to investigative reporting and being a good journalist, being objective and sort this out, because, boy, that group of people are very, very scarce, and we get to quote them on our program because we do truly believe that they're independent-minded journalists who are trying to prevent the facts. They never come down and say, we have the absolute final proof on every single thing. No, they just look into things, and they give us the facts, and they help us understand this. And I think that's going to be more necessary than ever. Our founders understood that, but we're living in an age right now where our freedom of expression is being challenged, and we have to work hard at it, because we don't want to lose our ability to get on Facebook and YouTube, because it truly has been helpful. I think it's a great idea of us reaching people, but when it's conditioned on us, obeying a certain amount of rules and restraints on how we can express ourselves, that's getting a little dangerous for me. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.